connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If it seems you are being asked,
CBS News Special Report, Super Tuesday. CBS News projects that former President Donald Trump will win at least 11 states, including Massachusetts, in the GOP primaries, with Vermont a toss-up right now between Trump and Nikki Haley. Trump saying a short time
ago...
They
tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive.
President Biden released a statement of just a few minutes ago highlighting progress during his term, saying it's at risk by Trump. The president is projected to win Democratic contests in at least 14 states, including Utah. CBS's Robert Costa reports.
In North Carolina, Haley supporters, based on our CBS News exit polling, are saying they're wary of Trump as the nominee. They don't know if they could even support him as the nominee. So how could this play out with suburban voters, traditional Republicans in places like suburban Philadelphia, suburban Detroit?
I talked for to Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggy. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know.
That could the come president together
of
in the, coming
the Wisconsin Technical CBS College
News
System is set to retire
I'm
later
Jennifer
this year.
Kuiper.
Dr. Mona Foy has served
Green Bay's
as the
a fine talent, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get? Yeah, from parking
students.
Tickets. And
Boy
we say that the Packers are going to donate
the
that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for mayor of Green Bay.
Recent the rainy Todd weather Allman has somewhat show. Lowered Weekdays, the risk of wildfires in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says most of the state's midsection is at a low risk of danger.
How dare Eric Hovde now? He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn. Host of the Maggie Don
Media News.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, the gospel you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Up North News Radio.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Hey, did you know the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, decided that Trump can't be thrown off the ballots in states across the country? And look, as I've told you, and I've said this for a while, one, wasn't thrilled with the idea of doing it. Two, I don't want him thrown off the ballot. But three, and most importantly, I don't ever want to hear conservatives talk to me again about states' rights. I just don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it. Seems to me this would be the ultimate states' rights issue. Whether a state has to have an insurrectionist on the ballot seems very clear to me, very cut and dry. But again, it's how our legal system has been perverted to where, hey, it's, I guess, red hat, blue hat. So we will see how this goes. Now, understand. I didn't want Trump thrown off the ballot because the victim thing, and he did exactly what I said he was going to do when this predictable outcome actually did happen, and that is, look at, I won again. Look at how Teflon Don I am. Look at how much of a victim am I am. Yeah, not surprising. Not surprising at all. And look, gave him that. So congratulations. But like I said, I never want to hear a conservative talk to me again about states' rights, because this seems like it should have been it. So there you go. That's all I have to say on that. It's now time for the campaigns to start moving forward and hammering it out, vying for the hearts and the minds, the votes of the American people. And just in time for all that to begin, the Heritage Foundation. the Heritage Foundation, one of the most destructive organizations in America, at least in my view, my humble opinion, one of the worst organizations and really the catalyst of a lot of the bad things that have happened in this country. They came out with their 2024 Index of Economic Freedom. And you know how they love the word freedom. And when they say freedom, whenever you hear a conservative talk about freedom, one, you have to think about what do they mean by freedom? What freedom are you talking? And whose freedom? Because this thing, I'm not going to call it a reporter study or anything like that. It's a propaganda tool in my view. Because look, you know, this is one of those things. I don't even have to read it to tell you what's in it. And it's like a lot of these reports that we see on both sides. We know the results of the report by just who put them out. So we honestly don't even have to do the actual study or read it. Just do the headline, because we all know that the headline is what you're looking for. And this is part of it. Now, we used to have governmental agencies that conducted actual studies, actual reports and information that, you know, had all parts in it and without the bias that we see today. Universities used to be a great place for non-biased studies and information until we had to sell them off because we kept taxing rich people less and less and less. So they got to buy universities. Understand, the U.S. is an information desert. There's lots of information. I'm not saying people are ignorant or stupid. I'm saying over misinformed. And we're running out of good places to get information. And understand, the Heritage Foundation is not that place. But the big Index of Economic Freedom is out. And surprise, surprise, there's a Democrat in the White House. We're not doing well. We're 25th in the world now. Can you believe? America's supposed to be number one. But that's Singapore. Now, what's interesting to me about these reports is I go back to 2016 when the other Democrat was in office. And, you know, Barack Obama. We were actually much, much worse in 2016. Oh, my gosh. 2016 was a horrible year. We were tied for 36th in the world. More like 39th, if you got a hair of a point one way or the other. We could have been 39th in the world in economic freedom. And look, we're the freest country in the world. We're where freedom is. We're the only country in the world with freedom. But here's the thing. 2017, just months later, the next report, the next economic freedom report from the folks over at the Heritage Foundation, we went from tied for 36th, skyrocketed, tied for 17th, possibly 19th. So worst case scenario, we went from 39th all the way up to 19th in just a couple of months. And what happened? What changed? They elected the other guy. What was his name? Oh, yeah. The guy who can't be held off the ballots. The guy who his administration was so much worse than anyone could have possibly fathomed. That's it. Went up because Donald Trump is on the job. Now, he didn't do anything. Nothing got done. But it's that messaging vehicle. And that's all this is. It's a messaging vehicle to make people think, hey, oh my gosh, we're more free. Oh, thank goodness for Republicans that we have more freedom. Because of the 12 categories, of which, you know, property rights, first and foremost. You know, can I own stuff, your stuff? Judicial effectiveness. Have we sufficiently bought the courts to side with us? Government integrity. I have no idea what that means. Here's the important one. Tax burden. How hath we cut taxes on the rich people? Government spending is another little category of theirs. How much are we spending on rich people? Cut those social programs like welfare and LIHEAP and programs that got a bag of groceries for granny. Fiscal health, not quite sure. And then the freedoms. Oh, the freedoms. Business freedom, labor freedom, monetary freedom, trade freedom, investment freedom, financial freedom. Yeah, freedom, freedom, freedom everywhere. Freedom, 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 freedom. Did I mention the word? It's freedom. Because this study, it's all about It's about freedom. The one that's most laughable to me is labor freedom. Whose freedom? Is it the freedom of workers to join and form unions to collectively bargain for the wealth that their labor creates? Better wages, hours, conditions, having a voice on the job. Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about the boss's freedom to fire anyone they want, to keep the workforce as desperate and as dependent as possible so that they'll keep showing up to crummy jobs and poverty pay and be grateful? Be grateful for the situation. Is that what we're talking about? That kind of labor freedom? And as I've said a bunch of times, we could jump back up to judicial effectiveness. Are we sufficiently ruling against, you know, laws to strike down stupid things like minimum wage and maximum hour laws? You know, like the last time we talked, no, it wasn't freedom then. Sorry, I digress. It was liberty then. It was liberty of contract. Yes. You had the liberty to work as many hours as you wanted for desperation wages. You had the liberty to work in horrible, deplorable conditions, possibly to your demise. But that's your liberty. It's your right. Now we've just swapped the word liberty for freedom. Because to them, it doesn't matter what the word is. It's as long as we stay stupid and go, okay, freedom. But again, freedom for whom? For you and me? No. Not for us working people. No, no, we're the target of these reports. We're the target of these groups who are hell-bent on ensuring that, well, they make more and we make less. And why? Why is this study so skewed in the way that it is? Well, it's clear. Who funds the Heritage Foundation? It's not working people. You're not writing the monthly check to the Heritage Foundation to keep their lights on so they can keep coming up with bad ideas to destroy the heart and soul of what was the most prosperous working class in history. No. These are the folks who bring us lots of bad ideas. And even when they do bring us a reasonable idea that you go, I don't know, it's not horrible, like the Affordable Care Act, we fall off the wagon, so to speak. And this is where I'm struggling with this index. If you want to talk about real freedom, talk about the freedom of workers to be able to put food on the table and a roof over their heads. Talk about the freedom of people to start businesses in their local community and not being crushed by big monopolies. Let's talk about real freedom for people. Let's talk about, are you free from going hungry, from going homeless, from not getting an education? Are you free from the worry of healthcare? Because, hey, most people I know, most people my age that I know who are still working, it's because they have to, because of healthcare. We had a national health, I hear this all the time. If I had a national healthcare system, I'd retire at 55, 56. But here we are. Freedom. You got freedom. Nobody else. But according to them, we're 25th. We're the 25th. If we just cut taxes more and screw over workers more, we could maybe rise. And if Trump gets elected in 2025, takes over in 2025, we're going to skyrocket.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, my mind is stuck on 2016 to 2017. As I said, it's weird to me how we went from possibly 39th in the world of freedom. economic freedom, to just a year later, jumping all the way up to 17th, and nothing really changing. That's the part that gets me with this index on economic freedom from the Heritage Foundation. Just blows my mind. And here to share some thoughts on, well, actual economic freedom, and maybe how we get to a place where we talk about how we solve real problems instead of this kind of weird stuff. I've asked our good friend Mateus Fernando to come talk with us. Mateus is an economics professor, an actual guy who studies this kind of stuff at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what do you think of the Heritage Foundation's little report? This is the 30th year they've been doing this. Thoughts?
Yeah, I couldn't find it, but I think I did write at some point on this on my blog, so it's not something I would have taken too seriously, I should say. But I might have on the blog. It's typical that they do what you suggested, that they have on an index that I'm going to suggest that it's very poorly constructed and does not measure anything that could be called economic freedom. But yeah,
well, that's because you're against freedom. That's why.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, beyond that discussion, I'm happy to have that discussion of what's the meaning of freedom here and what kind of freedom they're for. But they often have a political use of the index. So it's a poorly designed sort of index that clearly also has had some political use, and that has been used against governments on the left in other countries, and as you pointed out, clearly to favor some perception of what Trump did as something positive. So I should say that, you know, there are some things that I think are evident, and that the first things that, so it's a set of four kinds of things that go into the index. And the overall thing that I would say before we go into some of those categories, there are too many things that they put in the index and for us to discuss here, but in general, what they mean by economic freedom is the freedom of capitalists, the freedom of firms, the freedom from billionaires to do whatever they want. There is one they call labor freedom. When they look at regulatory sort of freedoms, and they have business freedom, meaning bureaucracy, how much bureaucracy you have to say open a business, something along those lines. They have monetary freedom, the independence of the central bank. That's what they mean. And independence of the central bank means that the central bank is independent from the treasury, but not from financial markets, from the banks. So bailing in banks perfectly confined with freedom. It's the freedom again of banks of doing whatever. They can play with your money. And if they go bankrupt, we go and rescue them, and that's freedom. So that's the notion of freedom that it's behind this. So it's a very biased vision of freedom. And labor freedom. And you know what would be labor freedom? So Alabama would be much freer than say Pennsylvania. It's any state that it's free to work.
Right to work laws.
Not free to work.
The right to work laws that
you end up saying everything is free. So right to work, state would be freer, and will have more freedom than it's not the freedom of workers to organize in a union and have collective bargaining and get decent work conditions and higher pay. It's the freedom of the capitalists to do whatever they want. And so there are many of those things that are hidden in this little index. So, for example, government spending is seen as negative. So the share of government spending in GDP goes down, and it's a good thing. But there's nothing that says that you're freer with that. For example, we are freer because we have pension systems that allow people to retire and not work until they die. In this case, if you have, for example, are we, freer than, say, Sweden because we have a pension system that it's less encompassing than their kind of, so all of these freedoms say nothing, for example, about what Trump did with kids on the border. So were those kids that were jailed, and free during the Trump administration, in which the numbers improved so much? So this is just to give some examples of the things that are in this index that make no sense. So it's a particularly biased version of what freedom means. It's a freedom not of, of the freedoms of the kinds that FDR was concerned with, the freedom of you know, allowing people to have and put forward the best potential, that they are allowed to have access to education, access to housing, access to, you know, decent living conditions that would allow them to be effectively free. You know, it is freedom for those with money. That's the Heritage Foundation vision of freedom.
Yeah, and that's what jumps out at you when you look at it. And look, not surprising, because this is, well, who funds them? I mean, the moneyed interests are the ones who are putting, you know, that their money into the freedom, into the Heritage Foundation. So not surprising. Now, you brought up, you know, FDR, you know, the four freedoms that he was talking about: freedom of speech, worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Those last two, the Heritage Foundation, not overly thrilled with.
No, not at all. That's what I say. You have to compare those four freedoms with the freedom that they want. It's freedom essentially for capital. It's freedom, what they call freedom of labor. It's a terrible, it's the one that offends me the most, because it's freedom for scabs. It's workers not to pay, you know, dues. That so it's undermining a system that has been highly favorable to workers. So that's what they call freedom for labor. But it's freedom of capital. It's elimination of any sort of government intervention that can protect those that are in need. So giving people with power more power, and what they call rule of law. You know, and so it's property rights. It's protecting, you know, the rights of those that are already very wealthy. Eliminating the possibility of, say, taxing the rich. That's what they're thinking. They have, I don't know, you know, I was looking here, you know, as we're talking, and I don't remember, and I haven't, as I told you, I never looked at this in too much detail, because I don't think it's actually, it doesn't merit looking in too much detail. But they have judicial effectiveness, and the Heritage has moved from being a somewhat, they were always on the fringes in many ways of the conservative movement up here in the 70s to be that kind of stuff. But they also, I should say, I mean, Obamacare, which was a good thing, but it was a market solution, and it was Romney Care. The design was in Heritage. You know, it was done by Heritage Foundation, and that was their opposition to what I still think is the best system. It's single payer, you know, which, you know, you have a public system that provides health for everybody. And it's more efficient, and countries that do have it, you know, in Western Europe and so on and so forth, are more efficient, pay less, and they get more or less the same results, sometimes better results in terms of health than we do, spending less. But, you know, that's another discussion. My point is, there used to be at least a conservative movement that has a preoccupation with actual solutions to things. So as much as I think that Obamacare is less than I would want, it was a direction of helping solve some problems. So we have covered more people. So there are 10 million or so people that didn't have insurance pre-Obamacare that do have insurance. And that, in my book, it's a good thing. And they have insurances that are relatively cheap, and that they, you know, cannot be kicked out if they are, you know, if they are ill, or if they have a tragic sort of event and whatnot, they cannot be excluded as they could before Obamacare. So all of that good for Heritage when they were serious, but they moved into Trumpism. And this kind of, for example, judicial effectiveness, it is essentially saying, you know, that you can, I want to check on this, that, you know, it is about what they call activism. But at the end of the day, forget the things that they will say about Trump and this, that, and the other. It is a Supreme Court that it's there to take some rights from people and essentially, you know, to be pro-business. That's the business of the judicial system for them. So it is nefarious. And what is nefarious about this is that they wrap a discourse that it's essentially a witch hunt that reduces freedom as an enterprise that it's pursuing the freedoms of individuals. So it is Orwellian in that sense. So right. This is very dangerous.
And for me, you know, as someone who does a little program like I do, I look at this as a potential messaging vehicle. I look at the fact that now you're going to have right-wing mouthpieces all over the country going, see, the Heritage Foundation, the esteemed Heritage Foundation, has said that we're less free. And it's all because of, well, you know, back then it was Biden and now, or back then it was Obama and now it's Biden. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that, you know, the Obamacare was the Heritage Foundation's solution to Hillary Care of the 90s.
People are against their own policies if they're implemented by somebody else. These people are insane.
Yeah. You got what you wanted. And I said from the beginning, when Trump came into office, how about we just rename it Trump Care instead of Obamacare? This way they could be for it.
Yes. That's a good solution.
It was simple. Have a party in the Rose Garden, rename it, maybe fix some stuff because there are some problems with it, and say, look, you made it new and improved. Art of the deal. Congratulations. And
love this story. So Lula, when he was elected in Brazil, he created Bolsa Família. Bolsa Família was this program that gave, you know, essentially to families that, you know, don't make enough, and, you know, there were significant numbers of those in Brazil. The program grew a lot with Lula. You know, they gave, if they send their kids to school, they send, you know, money. There were, you know, food transfer, so like a food bank thing. So there were many things that, you know, they paid for part of their gas at home, and so on and so forth. So it was a you know, not a lot of money, I should say, in terms of dollars, it was a limited sort of size, but very widespread and make a huge difference in reducing, you know, inequalities and poverty in Brazil. So it was a good thing. When Bolsonaro came, officially they wanted to end it, but they didn't. When the pandemic came, they kept it. They changed the name. So instead of being Bolsa Família, which means, you know, family scholarship, they call it Brazil something program. And yeah, and so they just changed the name and they kept the same program, and they say that they created the program. So, you know, there you have it. I think in that respect, it might be a good solution for this kind of program.
So maybe there's a way forward, because if we could change, you know, the name of school lunch programs that feed hungry kids at school, maybe if we could change, you know, the welfare system into, you know, some kind of, I don't know, some Orwellian right-wing doublespeak, maybe they could be for it. I'm not sure, but here's my problem with these things. They're really not about freedom. They're certainly not about workers. Why isn't there something on the other side that you know, says, look, this is what economic freedom for families would look like? Or is it out there and I just don't see it?
Well, it's that, you know, freedom is not a particularly good word for this. So what we normally measure is, you know, it's well-being. And, you know, when you look at a measure of poverty, you know, and other measures of well-being, so for example, inequality, things like that, they give you a sense of what we are interested. So we're in the four freedoms of
speech, you know, worship, want, and fear.
Yes, of FDR. Those fears are, you know, those freedoms are associated to the equality. So if you were, you know, if you have Social Security, you don't have to be afraid of being in old age, you know, and not having what to eat, and, you know, and so. You know, if you bought your house with an FHA loan, you know, from the government, and, you know, and we subsidized, of course, you know, that you'll have a roof and you have a Social Security, and you probably will have, you know, Medicare, and so, you know, you should be reasonably okay in old age. Then that, you know, after a whole life of working, should be something that we all deserve. So I think we have that, you know, with all the problems. Inequality is incredibly huge in this country and around the world. But one thing that makes us different from what we were at the time of FDR is that they didn't manage yet to unmake those reforms of the New Deal. What remains that it's good and still gives us freedom, in part those four freedoms, is exactly the same reforms that started with FDR, were complemented by Kennedy Johnson. And to some extent, you know, we got a little bit more here and there with Obamacare, you know, things that communists like Nixon did, you know, the EPA to protect the environment and whatnot. But, you know, we kept some framework, and that's what provides freedom. So I think that there is enough. You're right that the right wingers are always better at having one little number within the list. And what we are trying to defend is a complex set of policies that are reasonable for a broad group, because it's not just for the working class, it's for the middle class, and, you know, for the very wealthy, because in part the firms in the United States, corporate power, can get away with not paying, you know, decent pensions and so on and so forth because there is a Social Security. So we're doing part of the business that corporations should be doing. So part of this is, whether we like it or not, it's to avoid and preclude that corporations do what they say they would do better. You know, that the private sector could, you know, provide pensions, but they never did. They never did. So that's the truth of it.
There you go. Mateus, as always, I appreciate your thoughts on this this hysterical index, Economic Freedom of the World Index. Wow, just interesting stuff. But I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, as always.
Thank you for having me.
Our good friend Mateus Verningo. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. For our Free Speech TV audience, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time for our radio affiliates across the country. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.
The Shaw, WAUK.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds here for the overnight. A light north wind and mid-30s expected by daybreak. On Wednesday, skies turning mostly sunny, highs in the lower 40s. We'll see more clouds on Thursday. By the afternoon, we'll top out in the mid-40s with some rain late Thursday night. Currently 35 degrees.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Covering all the news that affects you with... Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, Sean Fain and the UAW, they've committed some $40 million in union resources to organize workers and, well, rebuild and reunite America and the working class. And look, I don't know if those resources have hit the streets yet. I don't know if they've been spent yet, but the commitment to organizing is showing early signs of success. I look in my former, where I lived for a while out in the Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton area of Pennsylvania. There has been a union election filed at Westport Axle Lobby just recently. And look, not surprising. The company has enlisted the likes of a major union-busting law firm. There to do their dirty work and their dirty deeds of harassing and intimidating workers as they fight for a better life, better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, a voice on the job. And here to talk about this campaign and what these workers are going to do, I've asked Buddy Maxwell to come talk with us. Buddy is the lead organizer for UAW Local 677 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Buddy, thanks for taking time for us.
No, thank you for inviting me, sir.
So walk me through, what is Westport Axle Lobby do, and walk me through some of this campaign.
Well, they build axles and they build seats and they also build our tires and wheels. That actually who they support is Mack Trucks, as well as a couple other manufacturers. And right now they are in the midst of a organizing campaign to organize themselves in order to become a union, in order to fight what's been going on within the facility.
And, you know, again, a lot of this, when we came out of the pandemic, a lot of people, you know, they raised their head and realized they haven't been getting a reasonable share of the wealth that their labor creates. The inflation has, you know, just decimated workers' salaries. And this idea that we've got to get better wages, hours, conditions, but also dignity and respect. You know, as I've said, coming out of the pandemic as, you know, essential frontline heroes, this kind of stuff we've now internalized. Or do you see that playing out?
What's happening right now is the situation is exactly what you said, that workers are looking to get their dignity and respect within the facility. they feel like the company has not really listened to them, or it's awfully strange that they want to give a $1.50 raise now and they want to give hamburger parties and so forth when they decide they want to form their union. Okay. Where was that about a month ago? Where was it to where they were willing to sit down and talk about point system a month ago? It's all of a sudden starting to happen now.
What are the big issues? I mean, is it pay? Is it working conditions? Is it, you know, all of the above? What seems to be, in your estimation as the organizer there, what are the workers saying that their major concerns are?
Their major concerns are pay, of course, their benefits, the health and safety are in the facility. A person can't, if they get hurt at the facility, they just get a Band-Aid, get it wrapped, and get sent back to work. That's something that's horrible for the workers to even endure. They also definitely want their respect and dignity within the workplace. There's too much favoritism going on in there that they've highlighted to where the workload is just so much on them. They got some of them are doing two and three jobs. And the fact that they go home tired. You got to realize they have a family to go home to.
Yeah. No, I hear that a lot. You know, people go home from work exhausted and can't do things. And look, you're going to be tired at the end of a work day. You did some work, but there's a difference between being tired and being exhausted. There's a difference between being, you know, I did my job and, well, I'm now completely spent, especially if you're having a hard time making ends meet with wages that are, well, not sufficient.
That's exactly correct. Right now, the plant manager is making $77,000 a year, where the average worker at Westport is anywhere between $30,000 to $35,000 a year, and maybe some less than that right now.
Wow.
That's just an average. And that doesn't include their health care benefits getting taken out.
Well, I guess, you know, because I was looking up some of the information on this organizing campaign before we spoke, and one of the things that jumped out at me is that this company seems to have a lot of money because they've hired the largest union-busting firm in the entire country. So it seems like now there's money to be spent, just not enriching the workers, but enriching the largest union-busting firm in the country. So I got to imagine captive audience meetings are coming, harassment, intimidation, you know, threats of firing, maybe even someone getting fired is probably coming.
Well, as of recently, we've had some people that were discharged, which we have filed in our NLRB labor charges on because they were actively in their campaign. It is strange that they want to say the union is third party, but here they are bringing a third party in, paying lots of money to them in order to make sure they don't form their union, have their voice in the workplace. That's kind of ironic. And they want to keep saying that we're the union coming in is third party, when they don't realize the union or the workers.
Yeah.
The union is who is within the facility.
No, and that's an important point, because, you know, what the right has done masterfully is they've pigeonholed you guys into, well, you're just an outside entity. You're an agitator from outside, when the reality is the union is the members. It's not the leadership. It's not Sean Fain. It's not Buddy Maxwell. It's each individual person in that plant saying, I want a better life for myself and my children and a better future. And I think that's a message that we've got to be harping on from now until the end of time, because that's the reality of what being a union member is.
Yes, unions is the community. It is not the manager. It is not corporate. Right now, our communities is the union. The people that work inside that facility is part of the committee. I mean, part of the community. I'm sorry, part of the community. And part of the community is the face of Mack truck workers, any worker that is trying to make a standard living. It's Westport Axle. It's anybody trying to use their hands. These hands, they're trying to use them in order to make a living. And right now, corporate greed is the substance of why we are fighting.
And, you know, we've been seeing a lot of union activity the last couple of years. And that's, I got to believe it's coming out of the pandemic. It has a lot to do with the inflation, but it also has a lot to do with workers have finally, you know, waken up to the reality that they've been disposable for too long and that it's time to fight for dignity. And, you know, as I've spoken with people who have organized over the last couple of years, People who never had a union background, people whose parents weren't in unions, people who never thought they would be part of unions. But as they've come to it, they realize it's about empowerment. And that empowerment's contagious. And this, I think, is what corporate America really fears. They fear an empowered worker because that becomes an empowered citizen. And, well, the wealth class of this country, they don't want that.
No, they don't want to see us across the table negotiating with them, because then we're equals. Right now, the company has all the power within the within the workplace, because they control everything. In a non-union workshop, they control everything. But in a union workshop, we're able to look at them face-to-face, stare them in the eye, and be able to negotiate our pay, our benefits, the health and safety within the facility, how there's the workloads, the movement of the people within the facility. They can't just go and tell John Doe that they got to work over here one day and then work over here another day. In a union facility, that's able to be controlled a lot better. And that's what they don't want. None of the control to be a part of the facility.
Yeah, it's all about...
They don't want us to have it.
It's all about dictatorial control. And, as I've said, look, I've been a Teamster for over 30 years, 35 years. And as a driver, I've never taken an unsafe vehicle on the road, because I've had the union backing to say, no, I'm not taking that truck with no brakes. No, I'm not going to take that vehicle that has, a leaking airline. I'm not going to do these things that are not safe. And not just because I want to protect myself or other motorists, I want to protect the company as well. So this, having an empowered worker, is not just good for the workers, it's good for the company as well. And this is where I struggle seeing places like Westport Axle Lobby, who is now sharing a law firm with Amazon, one of the biggest union busting companies in the country. This doesn't send the right message to me, buddy.
No, it's not sending the right message to the community as well. I mean, like I said, we got people who have brothers, sisters, cousins that work at the facility. So it's sending a strong message that they want control and they want to be able to hold the working class down. So right now within the facility, there's 80% Hispanic people in there. And right now there's a barrier there. That's what they want.
Yeah.
They want something like that. But like I said, right now it's a facility that needs to be organized for themselves in order to empower themselves through the UAW resources that we have to continue to empower them and allow them to have a say in their workplace.
Now, I got to tell you, buddy, I'm looking at the UAW, and I haven't been able to always say this. I'm looking at them very positively right now, because I think Sean Fain and the new leadership is moving in a direction that's all about organizing. It's all about bringing people in. It's all about the right message and sending that message of, there's a class war going on. The wealth class of this country, they control our politics. They control our workplaces. They control our local governments. They control virtually everything we have. And it's time to take that back. And I love the fact that you guys are out there now saying, look, we're gonna bet the farm on organizing for the future, because I think that's what's going to change the desperation and the poverty and the stagnant wages we've seen the last 40 years.
Yes. The way I look at it right now, that Amazon, 18 to 25, that are right now, from day one, they can't work because they don't have the money to be able to support their families. They're right now hurting. But I will tell you right now, Westport employees, they know what they need to do in order to take that next step, in order to empower themselves, in order to be able to have a good wage, to be able to fight the inflation, fight corporate greed. Right now, they are on fire. We just had a meeting yesterday, and they are right now totally 100% on fire. And right now, they are in there. They are doing union things right now, such as wearing shirts, such as communicating. They're doing what needs to be done. I don't know how to put it. They were just like the Mack truck workers when we went on strike. They were on fire then. We were on fire. It wasn't just that we were on fire. And it seemed like organizing drives and the fact of the people want to be empowered with their workplace seemed like it's taken for a turn to way back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s when the U.S., the USA was making a movement to organize.
Winning is contagious. That's the reality.
Yes, it is.
You want to be part UAW of a movement. Have,
they won record contracts. We won a record contract. We're with our wages and our benefits. And right now, they want a piece of that pie also. They want to start saying, look, if they can do it, we can do it. And that's the attitude they're taking right now.
Absolutely. Last question I've got for you. You know, one of the things I say all the time, if there's an organizing drive, if there's a strike, I want the community to get involved. I want to adopt a striker. I want to adopt an organizer. I want community members who may never be a union member, but support unions to get out there and help these workers to make it through these campaigns. Because this is difficult stuff on families. This is stressful. These companies do not go lightly. So what can people do? What can I do? What can folks do to help?
Support them family wise, support them. You, if you see, like we got the St. Patrick's Day parade, support them as they come through with us, with the, with the local 677. I don't know how else we got a lot of community support with our strike and those same people that supported us were asking that they support Westport also in their vote that's coming up. Hopefully within the middle of the month, we're going to have rallies. We're going to have a lot of things going on so the workers know that not only do we support them as a community, but also the other local labor unions within the community supports them also.
Yeah.
So they're not doing this alone. That is for sure. They're not doing this alone. So definitely, we're hoping that in the middle of the month when they have their vote, that they win their union and they can already become, they're already empowered, but where they already can share the power within that facility.
There you go. Buddy Maxwell, I appreciate the time. Wish you the best. Hope for the best come the middle of the month, and I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's happening and what more we can do.
Rick, I appreciate it. Thank you, and God bless.
Thanks so much, Buddy Maxwell. He is the lead organizer for UAW Local 677 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me, are there any organizing campaigns going on in your neck of the woods? I want to hear it. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1770. That was the day of the Boston Massacre, when the first shots of the American Revolution were fired. But did you know that the massacre happened in part because of a dispute over jobs? In 1767, the British had passed the Townshend Revenue Act. It levied import taxes on goods such as tea, lead, paint, paper, and glass. Colonists were required to purchase these items from the British. The aim was to raise money to pay for the salaries of government officials in the colonies. The colonists resented the taxes and organized boycotts against the goods. Boston was at the heart of the dissent. In response, the British moved their soldiers into port cities to see the enforcement of the law. This angered the colonists even further. British soldiers tried to find part-time work since they earned poor wages for their service. This put the soldiers in direct competition with the tradesmen in Boston. Things came to a head when a brawl broke out between a group of colonist rope makers and British soldiers. 3 days later, about 50 colonists taunted the sentry at the custom house and pelted him with snowballs. More soldiers rushed to the scene. A soldier shot into the crowd. It's believed by accident. A volley of shots then rang out. 5 protesters fell dead. One was a rope maker by the name of Samuel Gray. Another was an African-American man named Crispus Attucks. The British attempted to appease the colonists by repealing all of the import taxes except the one on tea. But this reversal came too late. The shots had been fired that began the march to revolution. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to The Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. We are radio of, for, and by we the working people. Check out our program at therickSmithShow.com. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at therickSmithShow.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. So here's the thing. And look, I love talking with Buddy Maxwell, and I love talking with union organizers because we've all got the same stories. You all hear the same kind of things. It's about empowering workers and getting them to do what they want to do. They want to make their lives better. They want to make conditions better. They want to make change and feel empowered. They want that. And the greatest thing when you're doing organizing is seeing that happen. Seeing people find themselves in these campaigns and realizing that they have the ability, they have the power to change things. And this is the remarkable part of and why I'm such a big supporter of unions. When workers feel that empowerment in the place that they spend more than a third of their lives, that translates into empowerment in other ways. And this is part of why employers and the wealth class are so dead set against unions. Yeah, it's about the profit. It's about we don't want to share. Now, we've got things right where we want them. No, we don't want you around. But it's also about when you start empowering people to think about other things outside of what's being spoon-fed, the daily outrage, the daily, you know, nonsense from people like, oh, I don't know, the Heritage Foundation and their economic freedom reports. That changes things in a much better way. It makes life easier for not just those workers, those empowered workers, but all working people. And I go back to my grandparents' generation, you know, the people who brought us the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization because they came back from World War II and fighting fascism overseas to fight on the shop floor for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for their children, you know, better society, better lives. And they, as a kid growing up, look, union job, better life was front and center. So when I see these organizing campaigns go on, I know, having done them over the years myself, I know that there's a road ahead that's not great. And you prepare workers for this. Understand, if you want to fight for your rights, it's going to be a fight. These employers, these benevolent dictators, they are not going to just give you what you're asking for, what you're demanding. What you think of as, oh, the benevolent dictator gives me all these wonderful things, quickly turns into the tyrannical dictator. And they hire union-busting law firms, like this Westport Axle Company did. Understand, in the U.S., workers have the right to engage in union organizing activities without fear of reprisal, without fear of retaliation, without fear of harassment, intimidation, but yet, when they hire these union-busting firms, what's the first thing they do? It's all about the harassment, the intimidation, the threats of, hey, you could lose your job. Oh, whoa, you could get demoted. All kinds of stuff. They surveil people, especially the people that they've chosen as the agitators. And they monitor their every move in the hopes that they get to fire them. And when they do, when something does happen, there's always selective enforcement. So those union people, they get made an example of, you know, so that the rest of the people stay in line going, oh, I don't want to be over there. Don't want that. And for the people who are saying, well, we don't want to be like them, they offer incentives. they offer, it's kind of like dealing with children. When one of the children are acting poorly, you encourage the other one to continue to do well by giving them, you know, candy or some kind of, you know, raise, promotion, other incentives that are going to make them happy in exchange for their loyal opposition to making their lives better. And then the union busting firms come in with their captive audience meetings and the constant barrage of anti-union propaganda, whether it's, you know, flyers on your lunch table, mail coming to your home, or like in the case of Amazon, on the bathroom stalls. You can't even go and do your business without them, well, doing theirs. And then, of course, there are all the legal challenges. So if you're a group of workers who just want to start a union on your own, good luck, because you're going to get crushed by these big, high-priced anti-union firms like the one hired by this Westport Axle lobby group. Because this is what they do. Now, understand, and I've said this a bunch of times before, our labor laws are so pathetically weak and the enforcement is sadly too weak because, again, Congress has done a masterful job of defunding and ensuring that we don't prioritize their enforcement, that it's almost, it would almost be malpractice if you were a union-busting law firm to not tell employers to harass, intimidate, potentially fire, to do all the things that they do because the penalties are pathetically weak. The penalties are, well, if you get caught down the road, you have to post a dreaded notice that you won't do it again. You're sorry, won't do it again until, of course, next time when you do it again. And look, these folks are, they're masters. When they bring in these $10,000 an hour union busting law firms, ask Jeff Bezos how expensive they are, who are, you know, telling workers, no, things will be different in the future. We hear you. We have an open door policy. And I always go back to Trader Joe's because it's one of the great examples of why the open door policy is total BS. During the pandemic, two workers decided that they were going to believe their company. They were going to believe that the boss had an open door and that they could come in and make suggestions on how to make life safer for the workers during the pandemic, and did. They wrote a letter, and a very eloquent letter, on how the company could help them protect themselves. And, you know, went and put it in the suggestion box and went in through the open door of the boss's office, only to find themselves on the other side of the locked door as they were terminated for, well, making the suggestion on how to make the workplace better. Yeah. That's the American workplace. And we see these law firms all the time, and these companies get away with this. I go back to our legal structure. And, as I started at the beginning of the program, when you look at the Heritage Foundation's, you know, Economic Liberty and Economic Freedom Index, judicial freedom, you know, that judicial thing. How was it? Judicial effectiveness? Yeah, that judicial effectiveness means, how effective are you at upholding those, all of that horrible stuff we do that, so we can get away with it? Understand, right now as we speak, under judicial effectiveness, the richest guy in the country, Jeff Bezos, and Trader Joe's, since I brought them up, they are pursuing a lawsuit to overturn part of the National Labor Relations Act, ruling unconstitutional workers' ability to organize. Why? Because I think they believe that judicial effectiveness is on their side. I think they believe they have bought and paid for the best Supreme Court money can buy. And sadly, it's we, the working people, who get screwed over. And you may think I'm joking about all this. During my time of organizing, literally had an employer look me in the eye and say, I will shut this place down before I allow any worker to organize. And he spent millions of dollars fighting those workers tooth and nail. Millions of dollars. His grandchildren's inheritance. And he would have only spent a mere pittance of what he spent on denying them their rights, other than working with them and then everyone being better off. Again, what's it about? It's about money, but it's about power and control. And if the wealth class doesn't want you to have any power, they're going to do everything they can to take that away. And this is part of that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Grab the podcast. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.